Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Milwaukee history is inextricably linked to immigration, from the first German, French, and English immigrants who shaped the city's founding to Polish and Irish immigrants that helped build it into an industrial powerhouse to the Latino immigrants that have redefined the near South Side.
But more recent waves of immigrants from places like Myanmar, Somalia, and Laos are making their mark on Milwaukee as well. And as Barbara Miner writes in the current issue of Milwaukee Magazine, they're likely to continue to influence life here, regardless of the political winds in Washington. Miner spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers about what immigration in Milwaukee looks like today.
When I started writing this piece, I had no clue the many and varied and important recent immigrant populations in Milwaukee. You know, I knew about the Latinos. I knew about the Hmong. I knew about people from the Indian subcontinent. But I had no clue about the Rohingya, the number of Somalis, people from the Congo, the Eritreans. And I think in particular, I was surprised that right now, Milwaukee probably has more Rohingyans than any other city in the United States. I was flabbergasted. And I started reading about this and hearing about this at the very time when the news was coming out of Burma.
What does the new immigrant population look like in Milwaukee? Who are the people we're talking about here?
It's varied. I mean, first of all, the Latinos, you know, clearly are the dominant immigrant population. And unbeknownst to most people, it's actually the Latino population that has stabilized both Milwaukee's population and economy. I mean, they've been essential to stabilizing the city. After that, there's a very significant population of people from the Indian subcontinent. They've gravitated more towards the suburbs. They're more professional, particularly in the medical fields, the IT fields. But there's also a broad range of other immigrant populations. Many of them are refugees, even though refugees tend to be a smaller subset of immigrants. But from 2001 to 17, roughly or so, nearly 10,000 refugees were settled in Milwaukee County. And the top countries of origin, and this is what I really said to myself, wow, I don't know Milwaukee as well as I think I do. The top countries of origin for the refugees were Myanmar, which is the name for Burma, Somalia, Laos, Iraq, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Very different from the Polish, Irish, German population that I grew up with in Milwaukee. I'm Irish-German.
Now, why are most of these people coming to Milwaukee?
An important and not easily answered question. Part of it is that the world is in upheaval. All you have to do is open the newspaper. And right now, in terms of migration, I mean, there's the largest migration worldwide since World War II. Plus, we live in a global economy. I mean, just look at the dairy industry. Wisconsin's a dairy state. Well, right now, our dairy industry is completely dependent on Mexican immigrant labor. Now, that wasn't true 20 years ago. You know, all your major corporations, everything is global. They want and need people with global understanding, cultural sensitivity, linguistic abilities, and the immigrants provide this.
You mentioned before the Rohingya population, and I'd like to get back to that. You said, you know, Milwaukee is thought to have the largest population of Rohingya in the United States. What are the unique challenges that this group is facing?
Well, I think the main challenge for every initial immigrant group, certainly of the refugees or the non-English-speaking immigrants, is language. Because until you learn English, you're pretty much dependent on manual labor and service jobs because you have to have jobs where the language is not essential. And part of the difficulty goes beyond language because it leads to a certain isolation. They don't have the skills or the ability to counter what sometimes are the media stereotypes or misperceptions. They tend to naturally live within their communities, so they have that support system. But on the sort of counterbalance to that, they all have a strong, strong emphasis on education. And so they're very, very focused on getting a good education. The other flip side and people forget about this, is although many of these immigrants do not speak English, their language skills are just amazing. Invariably, I would talk to people, and I'd say, well, how many languages do you speak? And they'd say, oh, and they'd start counting, you know, 3, 4, 5. And partly it's because they speak their home language. And let's say they're from Burma, they might speak, you know, Burmese, but also a dialect from within the country. And if they had spent time in a refugee camp in Thailand, sometimes, you know, 5, 10 years, they've learned Thai or another country where they may have spent time during their refugee resettlement. They come to the United States and they're learning English, but they're also like at South Division, I spoke with this fascinating group of students. And I remember in particular one young woman from Saudi Arabia. She's a senior. She speaks Arabic and French. Her conversational English was amazing. And she said, well, yeah, I'm also learning Spanish and Sudanese Arabic. So these students and immigrants in general have an amazing linguistic strength that we don't recognize because they're not yet strong in English.
Many of these children have been in refugee camps, mm-hmm. and I had a chance to visit a school in Milwaukee last year to go into a class with refugee kids, and when we talked about education in these camps, they said, you know, it really varies mm-hmm. from country to country. Some, they are learning very, very little of anything. The schooling there is kind of non-existent. And then others have amazing education. How has MPS been working with refugee students to help them acclimate to school environments?
Well, this is an area where the Milwaukee Public Schools is probably the unsung hero of this story. Because, I mean, you know the old joke, what is home, the place where you knock on the door, they let you in? MPS is the first home for the refugee population. It takes anyone, as it should, and as it is committed to doing. I spoke with the woman who's in charge of the multicultural bilingual department at MPS and some of her coworkers, and she herself is Chilean. And the other workers there, they were so acutely aware of the importance of serving the students. I mean, this statistic blew me away. Right now in MPS, there are students speaking 54 different languages from more than 70 countries. And then MPS, as a result, they routinely translate documents, not all documents, but the major documents, into 6 languages, Spanish, Arabic, Hmong, which I wasn't too surprised, but then Somali, Burmese, and Karen. And these are just the major language groups in MPS. There's many, many, many more. And it's a real tribute to MPS, and it's going to make the city a better place that they're going to be graduating these students with, as I said, amazing linguistic and cultural sensitivities and strengths.
In the article, there was kind of a sidebar where you talked about MPS, and you mentioned a student mm-hmm. with anti-immigrant feelings.
Oh, yeah.
And this has become increasingly common. Of course, you also mentioned that historically, this is a part of the American fabric. You know, it's anti-immigrant feelings have run as deep as the history of the United
yeah.
States. But what's different about this moment in time?
Well, there's both similarities and differences. I remember I did a story maybe about 10 years ago about the South Side, and I talked to some older residents, and they would go on and on about the Polish and Italians fighting each other. And they would just tell these stories about, well, we couldn't go to that playground because that's where the Italians hung out. We couldn't go to that playground because that's where the Polish hang out. So this tension between the established immigrant groups and newer immigrant groups, that's nothing new. I think what complicates the current discussions around immigration is the issue of race. Because by and large, the 19th century immigrants were white Europeans. And by and large, the 21st century immigrants are not seen as white. And race and nationality are very complicated issues. And the census itself has almost bizarre definitions sometimes of who's white and who's African-American and who's considered Asian and who's not. So the tensions have always been there. But when I look at Milwaukee's history, you know, in hindsight, we're very proud of these different immigrant populations and all that they did to make the city an economic powerhouse. And my hope is that 20, 30 years from now, we will also look back and say, wow, weren't we lucky we had all these immigrant populations to make the city as great as it is.
The complications are not just of attitude or of feelings about immigrants, but also legislation that is making it much more difficult to come to the United States, whether that's making it more difficult for refugees seeking asylum or for people on the DACA program or the many ways that immigrants have been targeted by recent legislation and recent conversations in our government. When you spoke with people, did that concern them? What were their general feelings about the conversations that we're having in government?
Clearly, people are worried, and in particular, Latino population and the Muslim community, because those are the two groups who've been most targeted by the policies and rhetoric out of Washington. They have different concerns. I mean, the Latino population, clearly Trump's decision to end the DREAMer program, which is how it's referred to, which is the Deferred Action for Childhood Immigrants, that's had a huge effect. And, you know, you have people, I spoke to this one DREAMer, I think he's 28, 29 now. You know, he came here when he was, 13 years old. He said, you know, I know Milwaukee. His family is here. He's got a young son. He's married. He's bought a home. He's got a job. And his future, you know, 3 years ago with the DACA program, it was like, great, finally some security. And now Trump has thrown that, you know, up in the air. The one thing that, and the same is also true of the Muslim community. You know, the bans on travel and visas, which overwhelmingly are affecting Muslim-majority countries. A lot of these, thankfully, are, you know, they're in the courts. And we live in an era where I think it's safe to say what is true today may not be true 2 years from now. And so I hesitate to make too many overarching conclusions because we live in such a tumultuous time. What is true that right now, the Milwaukee Public Schools, the public institutions, city, county, at this point the police department, have responded in that they have not embraced an anti-immigrant hysteria. And that's important because within the city, there are some cities, I mean, I would not want to be in Arizona right now, nor in the last several years. But Milwaukee, due in part to a lot of organizing by the immigrant communities, and particularly the Latino community, we've not had, on a policy level, an anti-immigrant upsurge. Now, the flip side of this, and this is where people rightfully are concerned, you know, the rhetoric coming out of Washington feeds into and can help bolster, you know, right-wing, you know, white supremacist attitudes. And that happened with the Sikh massacre in 2012. So we have seen here in Milwaukee sort of the best and the worst of how these issues can play out.
Are people hopeful for the future? I mean, so many of these folks are working in advocacy. Are they hopeful for the future?
Many of the individual immigrants I spoke to, they're so busy. They're working. They have kids. They're trying to learn a new language. They're trying to navigate being in a new country. I mean, they're just focused on day-to-day life and surviving and make the best of their lives. I was pleasantly surprised that some of the people who've more established and are working on these issues, whether it's the Islamic Center, Voces de la Frontera, Pardeep, who works in doing a lot of peace education, they were hopeful. Actually, more hopeful than me. And I'm thinking, wow, these are people in the middle of it all, and they're very hopeful because one of the lessons that they taught me was, you know, none of us are ever going to reach this nirvana land of perfection, the perfect country, the perfect life. And that they felt that it's how one lives one's life that really defines who one is. And so they were living their lives in a way of trying to organize and, you know, improve cultural understanding, racial understanding, global understanding. And they were the better for it, and they believed that the community was the better for it. And ultimately I said, you know, if these folks can be hopeful and they're in the middle of it, it made me hopeful about the city.
Well, Barbara Miner, thank you so much for speaking with me today on Lake Effect.
Thank you.
Writer Barbara Miner's article on immigration in Milwaukee is in the April issue of Milwaukee Magazine. She spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers.